Chapter 29. The next day, Derek and Stiles are moved out of the ICU and into the regular unit. There's always people in and out. The entire Hale family takes it in shifts to make sure that they're never alone. Tom is there as often as he can be, which isn't as often as he would like to be. Derek has gathered that things in the outside world have gotten a little complicated, but no one has given him any specifics. Scott and his mom, Allison, and Heather are all frequent visitors. The one person that Derek hasn't seen is Peter, and he's so loopy and out of it that he doesn't even realize that until he does see Peter. More accurately, he hears his mother talking to Peter. He swims back to consciousness to hear her say, "Don't care if you like it or not, Peter. You're going to sit in that chair and listen while I read to your nephew and his mate." "I'm perfectly capable of getting home," is what Peter says in return. "Did I ask for your opinion? No, because it can't be trusted. Sit." Peter gives a heavy sigh, and then Derek hears him sit down. He can hear the steady pulse of his uncle's heartbeat, and it's reassuring. His mother picks up the book she's been in the middle of and starts reading. Derek dozes off, listening to the sound of her voice. He's been doing a lot of sleeping lately. 4 times a day, he's moved and then thoroughly scrubbed. He's still losing skin, but it's not as painful as it was in the beginning. Stiles is sleeping a lot, too, but on the whole, he's doing better. His memory seems patchy, Derek has noticed. He'll lose track of where they are in a conversation easily, but it's not as bad as it could be, and Derek is content to wait and see how things develop. After a little while, he hears his father's voice and Sheriff Stilinski's. "No, it's a good thing you didn't try to leave," Aaron is saying. Talia sighs. "Protesters again?" "Not as bad as yesterday," Tom says. "I've got half the cops in the county out there to make sure we don't have any more riots. Anyway, I don't think Peter would have handled it well." "Uncle P?" Stiles slurs out, and at this, Derek opens his eyes. Stiles has been having a hard day. He had his first physical therapy session a few hours previous. He hadn't even gotten out of bed for it. It had consisted mainly of him sitting up in bed while a woman gently moved his arms around to stretch out the muscles of his chest and back. He had done everything she asked with a completely straight face, and she had praised him for being so helpful and compliant. As soon as she was gone, Stiles had literally begun sobbing from the pain. Laura, who was there at the time, had nearly knocked over her chair trying to keep Derek from lurching out of bed. She had taken some of Stiles' pain, but they could never be sure how long that would last, so now he was heavily drugged on top of it. Peter stirs across the room. "Yes, I'm here." His voice is somewhat sour. "Talia doesn't trust me on my own." "Talia isn't alone in that," Aaron says, although his tone is gentle. Stiles flails in Peter's general direction, making grabby motions with both hands. "Come here so I can give hugs," he says. Peter sees Derek arch an eyebrow, but then rise from his chair and cross the room to Stiles' bed. Stiles hugs him hard, oblivious to whatever damage he might do to himself. "You save my father," he slurs into Peter's shoulder. "And Derek, 'cause he was too stupid to leave me. You're awesome." Peter lets out a little snort, but one hand comes up to smooth out Stiles' hair, which is a little disheveled after the trials of the day. "As you say," he says. "Don't leave, okay?" Stiles asks. "I know that you stayed alive for revenge, but don't leave. Promise?" He sounds very young, and at this, Peter just lets out a sigh. "I'm not going anywhere," he says. "Good," Stiles murmurs, resting his weight against him. Then he blinks a little. "What riots?" Tom sighs and sits down next to Stiles' bed, while Peter gently disentangles himself and goes back to his own chair. "Don't worry about it, Stiles. You need to concentrate on healing right now." It's a sign of how exhausted Stiles is that he doesn't argue. He sinks back onto the bed, face paler than usual, gaunt from the physical stress. He mumbles a few more things, but then falls back to sleep. Tom sits with Styles' hand in between his, rubbing the back of it with his thumb. "How bad is it out there?" Talia asks quietly. "No worse than yesterday," Aaron says. "All those WLO bastards with their signs and their slogans. I talked Cora out of coming to the hospital. It would only upset her. I'm thinking about sending her to stay with my folks for a week or so, along with Laura and the kids." "She won't go," Talia says. "Not while Styles and Derek are in the hospital." "I think things will get a little easier soon," Tom says. "I've been in touch with the folks up on high. Indictments are coming down tomorrow. Hell, half the people who are currently out there holding signs are probably going to wind up arrested." "Have we got enough?" Aaron asks. "Thanks to Styles," Tom says, squeezing his sleeping son's hand. "We can't indict everyone individually, but once the conspiracy falls into place, they're all culpable. Gerard and Alexander Argent have already been taken into custody. It'll all be released to the press tomorrow, so that ought to throw the riots into a tailspin." "But it comes off as an exercise in werewolf authority," Talia says. "It'll only fan the flames. Tom, we need Styles to make a statement." "He's not ready," Tom says, rubbing one hand over his forehead. "Jesus, Talia, look at him. He can barely string a sentence together right now." "I know that," Talia says wearily. "I do. But official indictments aren't going to defuse this situation. Styles is the one who can. He's the innocent kid who got caught up in things beyond his control, who uncovered this dastardly plot and risked his life to save his pack. We need him, Tom." "You do know that Styles was prepared for this, don't you?" Peter asks from his corner, and everyone blinks at him. Peter sighs his "why must I deal with the plebes" sigh. "Is his laptop here?" "Yeah, I brought it yesterday because he was playing some games on it while he was up to it," Tom says. At Peter's motion, he picks it up off the dresser and hands it over. Peter opens it up and taps at the keyboard for a few moments. "Here we are," Peter says, and taps at the touchpad. Moments later, a video begins to play. Styles is adjusting his webcam, and then he sits down across from it. Hi, everybody, he says. "My name's Styles. If you're watching this, I'm probably dead or something." He rubs a hand over his head. "See, there's some scary stuff going on, and I want to make sure I get my chance to tell my side of the story, just in case." It goes on from there. Styles doesn't give a lot of details. He gestures to his posters and uses names or specific incidents a few times, but he mostly keeps it personal. He talks about his first meeting with Derek and the subsequent broken heart. He talks about the bullying, about how jealous everyone was, and how they made him believe that he didn't deserve Derek. Then he talks about Derek and the Hales, about how the fire had destroyed them. He talks about Peter's insanity and Talia's refusal to believe that someone had murdered her children. He talks about how much he loves Derek, how the pack has changed his life and given him a family, and how terrified he is that something will happen to them, how he would do anything to protect them. Talia wipes the corner of her eyes, and Tom can't even watch the video, keeping his gaze on Styles' sleeping face instead. Aaron stands with Derek, not having realized he was awake, smoothing down his hair. Peter's face is blank, distant. "I don't know what's going to happen in the end," Styles finally says, "but in case something does, I just want everyone to know what was going on." He blows a kiss at the camera. "Love you, Derek. Love you, Dad." He freezes in the frame, and the laptop screen goes dark. "Damn," Tom says. He lets out a breath. "Okay. We'll release it with the indictments, along with the official news that Styles is in the hospital and can't give an actual interview right now." "He'll be quite the star when the press finally gets to him," Aaron predicts. "Only until they figure out the way he runs his mouth," Talia says, and laughs despite herself. "Then they'll like him even better," Aaron says. "Okay, I'm going to go call a couple of my contacts. We'll need to make sure we're on top of this. He gives Derek's hand one last squeeze and then heads for the door. Well, Peter says, standing up, protesters or no protesters, I'm not going to sit around the hospital the rest of my life. I'll take you back to the hotel, Talia says. Oh, any news on the house? Tom asks. Talia sighs. Deaton's been in and out. He thinks that a lot of what's inside is salvageable. The clothes can be laundered, anything made of plastic can be scrubbed. Poor Derek is going to lose his book collection, although maybe he'll enjoy starting over. The electronics are all fried, of course. As for the house itself, she gives a shrug. We probably could get it clean eventually, but it would be a lot like buying a house and then finding out it has black mold. You can never really get rid of it, no matter how hard you try. So I guess we'll be moving on to house number 3. It'll take some time. Laura and Jonathan will be staying with his parents until that's set up. Aaron and I can stay with his parents along with Cora. Derek, I'm assuming, will stay with you and Stiles once they get out of the hospital. Of course, Tom says. Cora can stay with us if she likes. She might prefer that, Talia says, and it would certainly be easier once school starts, especially if Derek convinces Stiles to start going to our school. Cora could drive them in the mornings. Well, he's sure as hell not going to that hellhole they call a public school, Tom says. I don't care what he thinks about it. I let him finish out the year there, but I've talked to him about it, but I think he's worried about leaving Scott alone. I can make arrangements for Scott to transfer too, Talia says. She laughs a little and adds, plus he can keep his math teacher. You remember her from the conference? The one teacher who was actually grading his work appropriately? I made sure she got hired over at our high school. I'm sure she'll be much happier there. Who wouldn't be? Tom says. And Derek gives a little hum of agreement and approval despite himself. You awake over there? Talia asks him. A little bit, Derek mumbles. Talia's hand rests lightly on his still-healing shoulder. Get some rest, Derek. Tomorrow is going to be a long day. As it turns out, the next day is a long one, but not for Derek and Stiles. For them, it's really no different. They're isolated by the hospital's protocols, with no real idea of what's happening outside. Stiles is feeling better for the first part of the day. He's sitting up in bed and reading and playing games on his laptop. Then he has another physical therapy session and winds up in another drugged stupor for most of the afternoon. Derek has his own physical therapy, which actually involves getting out of bed and walking around, making his skin stretch and move. It's still pink and quite tender, but the worst of it seems to be over. They tell him that he'll probably be discharged within the next couple of days. He hopes they don't think he's going any further than the chair next to Stiles' bed. But outside, he hears, things are quite exciting. Over 100 people in the WLO have been arrested and charged. Because the crimes are in multiple states, and they qualify as hate crimes, most of the charges are on the federal level. At the local level, Sheriff Stilinski is consulted with the Attorney General, going over Mike Whittemore's head, and they've issued an official statement stating that none of the Hales are going to be charged with anything. This led to some noise, particularly against Peter. But they're lucky, Tom says, that Kate was actively threatening the Hale family, and the Stilinskis, for that matter, when Peter killed her. Any question of whether or not he could claim PAC protection went out the window with that. Just as things were starting to heat up, Stiles' video was released. Excerpts of it were picked up by several major news channels, and the entire thing was available on multiple sites on the web. It went viral almost immediately. Stiles was an internet sensation in less than an hour. At the end of the day, Stiles is eating mashed potatoes and repeating his neurological exam. He scores 27 out of 30 this time, an improvement that has everyone sighing in relief, completely oblivious to his newfound celebrity. Then he manages to get his laptop to hook up to the hospital's Wi-Fi to check his email. Holy shit, he says, staring at his inbox. What the fuck, guys? We released your "If you're seeing this, I'm probably dead" video, his father tells him. Oh, Stiles says. He blinks. I have a fan club and a Facebook page and several people on Twitter claiming to be me. Only one of them has managed to spell my actual name right. It's been an interesting day, Tom says. The protesters are gone, which is good because counter-protesters had showed up in the hundreds, and there likely would have been riots if anyone from the WLO had showed up. Support and encouragement had been pouring in from all over the country. People had offered to pay Stiles' hospital bills and to build the Hale family a new house. There had been no end to it. Flowers start arriving the next morning. Stiles is particularly amused to find a generous bouquet from Lydia Martin and another from the Whittemore family. I'd like to say I was surprised by the response, he says, but actually I was banking on this response, so I guess I can't. When he sees Derek looking at him, he says, it's a Daniel versus... His face goes blank. He rubs both hands over his face. Fuck, I can't. Derek gives him a minute, then quietly supplies, David versus Goliath. Right, Stiles says hastily. David versus Goliath type of thing. You know, the boy facing down the powers of evil for the sake of love, blah, blah, blah. He slaps his laptop shut without opening a single one of the emails. Makes me sound way more impressive than I really am. None of that, Derek growls at him. You saved my family. You saved me. Just shut up and let people adore you. Stiles laughs at that. It's a little strange, so Derek presses the call button for the nurse, who comes in and asks Stiles to rate his pain on a scale of 1 to 10. Stiles says 4, which really means 6, so they dope him up. By the next day, Derek is up and walking around proficiently, which makes Stiles gripe and sulk because he's still not out of bed at all. They decide to sit down and answer some of his email together, but Derek's fingers are still too sensitive to type, and Stiles isn't coordinated enough yet. They recruit Cora, who types for them. A lot of it is spam and can be ignored. Some of it is official interview requests from the Today Show and news outlets. Cora answers all of those with a quick form letter saying that Stiles won't be up to giving interviews for a while, and all such requests should be directed to Talia's office. A lot of it is from local classmates or businesses offering support. Those are shelved for later. Some of it's hate mail, which Cora deletes without reading to Stiles. Some of them are personal, offering similar stories and words of encouragement. Those are the ones that Stiles insists on replying to. A surprising amount of it is people forwarding information about the deaths of local werewolves, wanting to reopen investigations into them to see if the WLO was involved. Stiles has Cora respond to those to tell the people to bring that to their local authorities, but he also sends a copy of it to his father and to Talia, so they can make sure everything is followed up appropriately. By the end of the 2-hour session, he's completely exhausted and barely able to manage a coherent thought, let alone a coherent sentence. He falls asleep while they're still reclining his bed back into a more comfortable position. Derek is discharged the next day and takes up residence in the chair next to Stiles' bed. He spends the day holding Stiles' hands while everything else happens around them. It's such a relief to be able to touch him easily that nothing else really matters. From his chair, he can smooth down his hair, drop easy kisses on his forehead, feel Stiles' pulse in his wrist and his throat. Stiles looks up at him dreamily at one point and says, I can't wait till we can have sex again. Tom chokes on his coffee. Talia groans and covers her face with her hands. And Peter laughs. It's not much, just a chuckle, barely audible. But it's the first time he's laughed since the fire. And Talia hugs him so hard that he starts to complain about her alpha strength. Then she comes over and kisses Stiles on the forehead. He's already fallen back to sleep. When Stiles is discharged from the hospital, they need actual subterfuge to get him out unscathed. Somehow, the date of his discharge is released, and there's press everywhere. Melissa puts Scott in a wheelchair and takes him out the front entrance, which fools the press long enough for them to sneak Stiles out the side. So the others were talking about having a surprise party for your homecoming, Tom says as he helps Stiles get belted in. I told him maybe it wasn't a good idea to startle the kid who got shot, so instead we're having an unsurprising party for your homecoming. Sounds good to me, Stiles says, as long as I don't have to cook. Or maybe even if I do. Geez, what's everyone's been eating while I was in the hospital? He gives his father a narrow-eyed glare. It had better not involve curly fries. I swear to you, I've only eaten curly fries once this week, his father says. Well, maybe twice. Stiles glowers at him. Nothing but celery and cauliflower for you, then. Tom just shakes his head fondly and pulls out of the parking lot. He's unsurprised to see the number of cars in their neighborhood. He's got the streets that lead to his house blocked off, and some of his deputies are making sure none of the press gets too close. This is Stiles' first time seeing the phenomenon he's created as anything but words on a computer screen, and he stares in a combination of fascination and terror. Jesus Christ, he says, as Tom edges the sheriff's cruiser between the two police cars that are blocking the road to their house. Jesus Christ! Tom reaches over and tousles his son's hair. We did try to tell you. Why do you think we snuck out the side door of the hospital? No, I know, I just... Seeing it is different. How are we going to handle it? Well, once you're feeling up to it, we'll do an official interview or two. Once they've gotten a chance to ask all their questions, they'll stop hounding you. Stop what? Stiles looks faintly perplexed. Hounding. Tom glances at his son. Pestering. Bothering. Oh, hounding! I thought... Stiles rubs his hands over his face. Sometimes it's like words just don't connect right. I know, Tom says. Stiles chews on his lower lip pensively. Is it going to get better? No real way to tell, kiddo, Tom says. All we can do is have you keep working with the speech therapists and the neurologists, see what comes back and what doesn't. Given how... His voice chokes up momentarily. Given how bad it was, it's amazing you came out as well as you did. Now there's a thought to help me sleep at night, Stiles says, as Tom pulls the cruiser into the driveway. The party guests have left a space for him, although the road is lined with cars. You want the wheelchair? Tom asks his son. No, just the walker, I think, Stiles says. Tom nods, having expected this answer, and goes into the trunk of the car. He takes out the walker that they've folded up there. Just as he's getting it situated in front of the car's passenger door, Derek comes out of the house, having heard them. He opens the door and grabs Stiles by the wrist, pulling him out. Oh my God, Derek, really? Stiles says, laughing, as Derek pins him up against the cruiser and rubs his scent all over him. Yeah, we haven't seen each other for like 2 full hours. You smell like hospital, Derek growls at him and rubs his cheek firmly against Stiles' temple. You can help me shower later, Stiles says, and Tom groans. Come on now, let me up. I need to walk past where Kate died on my own 2 feet. No werewolves, no wheelchairs, just a little bit of help from my trusty walker. Okay. Derek backs off and lets Tom set the walker in front of Stiles. He has to lean on it heavily and keep his pace slow as he shuffles along. He could do it faster, but he's learned that there are severe consequences to pushing himself too hard. They usually involve pain, drugs, and unconsciousness, and he wants to enjoy his party. He walks right past the spot where Kate died without looking at it. Derek pulls the front door open, and he makes his way up the front steps. He's mobbed the moment he sets his foot inside. Someone whisks the walker away so he can lean on Derek instead. Everyone has to hug him, carefully, and there are a lot of people there. Not just the Hale pack, but Jonathan and Aaron's family have both come, as well as Scott and his mother, Heather and her parents and her younger sister, and an awkward-looking Danny. Allison is there, wearing one of the pins that's a maroon ribbon that people started making in support of the Hale pack. Several of Cora's friends from school are there, including Erica Reyes and Vernon Boyd, and some of each of their pack. Along with them, every off-duty cop from Beacon Hills is in the house, and Stiles is willing to bet that most of the on-duty officers are going to find a way to swing by before the party is over. Styles can't have caffeine yet, or alcohol, not that it matters to him. So the drinks are lemonade and caffeine-free sodas like Sprite. It's a potluck, and there's a little of everything. Styles spends most of the party on the sofa in Derek's lap while people swirl around him. Scott, Allison, Heather, and Cora cluster around him like a shield. Talia apologizes because she can't stay very long. Her law firm is being inundated by requests for interviews for both her and Styles, along with a lot of correspondence about the WLO indictments. She's a civil lawyer, not criminal, so technically she's not involved in that, but they're organizing a class-action lawsuit for all the people who might have been victimized. She's also working with another firm to get the perfume companies shut down, and two public relations companies who are sorting through all the garbage the WLO has been publishing, both pro and anti-werewolf, so they can discredit it. It's a lot of work. She looks exhausted. Styles promises to help as soon as he can. She nods and kisses him on the cheek and tells him to take things at his own pace, but that she's looking forward to his help. Aaron is similarly busy. As a journalist, he's been helping write a series of articles that are getting published in a number of magazines and on the internet. The Hale Story, he calls them, and laughs. He's not as tired as Talia, but he's obviously had a rough week. Styles offers to help him, too. Aaron tells him that he'd rather you rest up so he can get back to cooking dinner sooner, in a teasing tone that makes Styles laugh. Peter sits in the corner and watches everything with a distant little half-smile on his face. Styles just outright asks him at one point, "Are you going to be okay?" "I don't know, Styles," Peter says. "I think that I'd like to be someday." "I'll take it," Styles says, and rests his cheek against Derek's shoulder. He lasts 3 entire hours, through hugs and pizza and 2 vigorous games of apples to apples. But eventually he starts to nod off. They tone the party down a little, and he stays curled up in Derek's embrace, enjoying the noise of his friends and family around him. "I'm going to take him up to bed," Derek says quietly, and everyone agrees that it's getting kind of late. They probably all have things that they need to be doing. Derek carries Styles up to his room and pulls the blankets down with one hand before laying Styles on the bed. He sits down next to him and starts to unlace his shoes. "Derek?" Styles asks, eyes fluttering a little. "Yeah," Derek says, one hand absently rubbing at Styles' forearm. Styles lets out a content sigh. "I'm glad you chose me. I don't know if I've ever actually said that, but I am, even after everything." Derek squeezes his hand. "Me too." "Because you're awesome and wonderful, and I couldn't live without you. Plus, you give amazing blowjobs." Derek nearly chokes on a laugh. He suddenly feels like things might actually be okay. Because even if his memory is a little sketchy and his vocabulary is a little mixed up, he's still Styles if he's making comments like that. And that's all that matters to Derek. "We should put that in our vows," he says. "We so should," Styles agrees. He turns his head to one side and sighs again as Derek starts getting him out of his pants, then unbuttons the plaid shirt he's wearing. "Arm up," Derek says, and lifts Styles' arm so he can slide the shirt off. He's wearing a t-shirt underneath it. Derek decides that it's fine for him to sleep in a t-shirt and his boxers. He tosses Styles' clothes into the hamper and then strips off his own, crawling underneath the blankets next to Styles. He doesn't know what time it is and frankly couldn't care less. He can't think of a single reason that he wouldn't want to curl up with his mate. "Love you," Styles murmurs. "Love you too," Derek replies. "Tomorrow I'm going to make cookies and answer emails and take a shower. If I promise to take it easy, will you jerk me off in the bath?" Derek nuzzles his ear. "I think we can probably manage that much," he says, but Styles is already asleep. Derek slips a hand underneath his shirt, slides it up to momentarily rest on the bandages that cover the still-healing wound, then over Styles' heart. He can feel his heartbeat underneath the skin, steady and reassuring. It's not perfect, but it's more than good enough.